The hospital did not feel like a place of drama after midnight. The fluorescent lights hummed. The air smelled of disinfectant and cooled sweat. On the night shift, you learned to move quietly and think fast, because there were fewer hands and the calls did not stop. Nurse Alana James had done this long enough to know her rhythm. Check on the post-operative patient. Reassure the old woman who rang the bell every hour. Chart everything. Keep your head down. Then Mr. Clark started walking her corridor. He was the night supervisor. Smart, smooth, always in a crisp shirt, always with a calm answer when supplies ran low or a relative became loud. At first, his extra visits felt like support. A kind word, a coffee left by the nurse's station, a joke that landed a little closer than it should. On a Caribbean night when the ward was nearly silent, the line between help and something else began to shift. It happened in a hospital that prided itself on protocol. It began with a door that closed just a little too softly. Chapter 1, The Line That Blurs. The hospital at night felt like a different world. During the day it was loud. Phones rang, trolleys clattered, families argued in low corners. After midnight, the building grew quiet, but it was not peace. It was a tight, stretched kind of silence that held every sound in place. On the medical ward, the lights were dimmed to a soft glow. Machines blinked their green and amber signals. A ceiling fan spun lazily and pushed the cool air around. Somewhere down the corridor, a television played a late news repeat for a patient who could not sleep. Nurse Alana James checked her watch. It was 1:23 a.m. She had already done one full round since midnight. She could feel the ache in her lower back and the dull tiredness behind her eyes. Night shifts always pulled at her body like that, even when she told herself she was used to it. She moved from bed to bed with the practiced rhythm of someone who had done this many times. Check the intravenous line. Look at the urine bag. Ask about pain. Speak softly. Document everything. There were only three of them on the ward that night. One registered nurse, one enrolled assistant, and one practical nurse. The others were on the surgical ward and accident and emergency. At bed 5, the post-operative patient groaned as she came close. "Miss Richards, it is Alana. How you feeling now?" The woman shifted slightly and opened her eyes a little. "Pain still rough, nurse." Alana glanced at the chart clipped to the foot of the bed. She checked the time of the last dose. She noted the numbers in her head. She knew when she could safely give the next set of pain medication. She also knew the surgeon who had written the order. He did not like calls in the middle of the night. "We're coming up on the time soon," she said. "I will bring something for you just now." She adjusted the pillow, straightened the sheet, and checked the drainage tube. The red line of fluid inside it moved slowly. The sight did not bother her anymore. She watched it with a clinical eye. Her mind counted, measured, weighed risk. By the time she reached the end of the row, she heard the familiar squeak of footsteps in the corridor. The rubber soles always made a small sound against the polished floor. She knew that walk. She did not need to look up to know who it was. "Night, Nurse James." The voice carried a smooth, unhurried tone. It always sounded like the person speaking had slept well and had all the time in the world. Alana looked up from the chart she had been writing in. "Good night, Mr. Clark." Night Supervisor Jerome Clark leaned against the nurse's station counter. His shirt was pressed. His tie was still tight at his neck, even at 1:30 in the morning. His ID badge hung straight on his chest, and his face held the faint smile he wore almost all the time. "You surviving in here?" he asked. "Medical giving any trouble tonight?" "Normal thing, man," she said. "Few restless ones. One post-op still in a lot of pain. Blood pressure stable, though." She passed him the summary sheet by instinct. He scanned it quickly with his eyes. "Good. Call the doctor if you need to. Do not try to manage too much on your own." He said the words like a gentle scolding and a compliment at the same time. Her colleagues often joked that he could correct you and still make you feel like he had praised you. It was part of why staff liked him. It was also part of why some of them did not trust him fully. He placed the sheet back on the counter and did not move right away. "You had dinner yet?" he asked. "Grabbed something from the cafeteria before they close," she said. "Nothing nice, but it will hold me till morning." He nodded. His eyes flicked briefly to the half-empty water bottle on the desk and the small container of crackers beside it. You work harder than you eat, he said. You know that. She laughed lightly. It was easier than pretending she did not enjoy the attention. If you say so, sir. You know I do not like when you call me sir. I tell you that already. It makes me feel like an old man. Supervisor Clark, then. He gave her that same easy smile. Jerome is fine. She looked down at the paperwork again. The pen in her hand hovered over the page. She did not say his first name. She was aware of the way it sat in the space between them. She did not want to pick it up. He pushed himself off the counter. I will make a quick round, he said. Then I will get out of your way. She watched him move down the ward, greeting each patient softly. He adjusted a blanket here. He checked a drip rate there. He knew the routine. He had been a nurse before he became a supervisor. He walked with the confidence of someone who already had the respect of most of the staff. As he moved, Alana felt the familiar shift in the air. When he came on the ward, things often felt lighter. People were less tense. He helped, he listened, he solved problems. But over the past few months, his visits to the medical ward during her shift had become more frequent. At first, she had told herself it was coincidence. Then she noticed patterns. It was always when she was rostered. It was always a little longer than the rounds on the other wards. During break, she sat in the small staff room at the end of the corridor. The room smelled of instant coffee and leftover curry. A small radio on the shelf played a soft reggae song. The fluorescent light flickered in one corner, but no one had gotten around to reporting it again. She took out her food container and opened it. White rice and stew peas from the cafeteria. It had already gone lukewarm. She ate slowly, thinking of the rest of the shift ahead. The door opened, and Mr. Clark stepped in. He carried two paper cups. I was passing the machine, he said. Thought you could use this. He placed the coffee on the table in front of her. The steam rose in a thin line. The smell cut through the scent of old food in the room. Thank you, she said. You did not have to. You are on the hardest ward tonight, he replied. And I saw you did two admissions back to back. I can at least bring coffee. He sat in the chair opposite her. For a second, the small room felt even smaller. She became aware of the way her uniform pulled slightly at her shoulders when she reached for the cup. She became aware of the strand of hair that had slipped from her bun and rested against her cheek. How long now are you doing night, Alana? He asked. On and off, about 3 years, she said. I did straight days when I just started. Night shift pay was too tempting to ignore. He chuckled. Money or peace and quiet? Both, she said. Day shift is like market. Night shift is hard, but at least the noise is less. You handle it well, he said. Some nurses lose their head when they have to make big decisions at 2 a.m. His gaze stayed on her a little longer than a normal work compliment needed. She felt it. It sat on her skin like the heat from the coffee cup. Everybody gets scared sometimes, she said. You just do not always see it. They spoke about the ward, about the shortage of staff, about the time the generator failed during a storm. The conversation flowed easily. He asked questions that made her feel like her opinion mattered. He nodded when she spoke about patient care and safety. He made small jokes about administration that made her laugh. Then something shifted again. You know, I heard from Sister Campbell that you are on the short list for acting charge nurse next quarter. She blinked. I did not know that. You should, he said. You deserve to know when people are acknowledging your work. Her throat felt tight. She took a sip of the coffee to cover it. I just do my best, she said. Plenty other people working hard too. Many people are working, he said. Not everybody is leading. You lead. The words landed in a soft place inside her. She had grown up in a small community where praise was rare and often guarded. Here, in this staff room, hearing it from a supervisor who had real power made her feel seen. You are kind, she said. I am honest. His eyes stayed on hers a beat too long. The air seemed to hold itself. The radio hummed in the corner. A trolley rolled past the door outside. The light flickered again. The door opened, and the enrolled assistant stuck her head in. Nurse James, sorry, bed 3 say he feeling dizzy. Alana pushed her chair back at once. Coming, she stepped past Mr. Clark and felt the faint brush of his arm against hers. It could have been accidental. It could have been nothing. Still, she felt a small current run through her body. She told herself it was only the sudden rush of standing up fast. On her way back from bed 3, she caught a glimpse of two nurses from surgical whispering near the supply cabinet. Their eyes flicked quickly toward her, then away. She heard a small laugh that cut off when they realized she was close. She pushed it aside. There was work to do. Later that week, the pattern continued. Mr. Clark passed by her ward again on another night. Again there was coffee. Again there was a quiet moment in the staff room. This time he mentioned music, asked what she liked to listen to when she had a day off. She told him about old soul records her father used to play on Sunday mornings. He smiled and shared a memory of his own. The conversations always started with work, caseload, audit reports, training sessions. Then after a while they slid into small, personal lanes. Nothing shocking, nothing you could point at and say, this is wrong, just enough to feel warm. She noticed he did not stay as long on the other wards. She heard one of the nurses in surgical say, in a half-joking tone, that Mr. Clark now owned a bed on medical. Another nurse laughed and said he had a favorite in a blue uniform. When Alana walked in, they went quiet. In the change room before shift, she found herself standing a little longer in front of the mirror. She smoothed her hair. She adjusted the line of her lipstick. The hospital had rules about heavy makeup, but she knew how to stay just under the line. She told herself it was about professionalism. She did not quite believe that. Her friend Marsha, who worked day shift on pediatric, cornered her one afternoon during handover. How come every time I leave evening shift, I see Supervisor Clark heading straight for your ward? Marsha asked. Alana smiled as she pulled her bag over her shoulder. Maybe he liked the view. Is what kind of answer that? Marsha said. You know people watching, right? People can watch, Alana replied. We not doing anything. Marsha raised an eyebrow. You sure about that? Alana felt a small sting in her chest. We talk about work, she said. He checks the ward like he is supposed to. Do not start with the mix-up. I am not starting anything, Marsha said. I am telling you. These hospital people love story. Today is little joke, tomorrow is rumor, next week is investigation. Just be careful. The word investigation sat heavy. Alana shrugged it off in front of her friend. Inwardly, the warning lodged itself in her mind. Still, when night came, and the building shifted into its quieter state, she noticed herself listening for the sound of his footsteps. One Saturday, the ward was calmer than usual. No new admissions had come in after 9 p.m. The television at bed 2 played an old Jamaican movie. The assistant nurse hummed as she restocked the trolley. Alana finished her charting and felt the strange feeling of being briefly ahead of the night. The clock on the wall showed 11:36 p.m. She stood at the window near the end of the corridor and looked out at the dark hillside beyond the hospital grounds. Small dots of light marked houses on the slope. The city lay further in the distance, spread out with a soft glow. You look like you're planning to run away. She turned. Mr. Clark stood a few feet behind her. You walk too quiet, she said. You are going to give somebody a heart attack one of these nights. He smiled. If anybody can handle a surprise, it is you. He came to stand beside her at the window. They looked out at the lights together for a moment. The glass held the faint reflection of their faces, side by side. You ever think about leaving? He asked suddenly. Going overseas, working in a big city hospital, making big money. All the time, she said. Then I think about my mother and my little sister back home, and my aunt who does not drive and calls me for every appointment. I cannot just pick up and go. He nodded slowly. It is the same for many of us, tied by more than the job. He shifted his weight, and their shoulders nearly touched. The distance between them felt smaller than it had before. The sounds from the ward seemed to fade. You know you could go far, though, he said. You have the kind of head and heart they do not teach in nursing school. That is rare. Her chest warmed at the words. She knew she was good at her job. She knew it in the way patients held her hand, in the way families asked for her by name. Hearing it from him, here in the quiet corridor, gave it a different weight. Thank you, she said softly. He turned slightly so his body faced hers. His voice dropped just a little. Alana, you know you can talk to me if you ever feel like this place taking too much from you. I am not only here to write reports and check staff numbers. She met his gaze, and once again the moment stretched, There was something in his eyes that did not belong to policy and procedure. It hinted at understanding and at something else. The assistant nurse called from down the ward. "Nurse James, the family for bed 7 asking for you." The moment snapped. Alana stepped away from the window. "Coming." As she walked past him, she felt his hand lightly touch her elbow. It was brief. It could be read as a supportive gesture. It could be read as something more. "You are doing well," he said quietly. She did not look back. In the days that followed, the whispers grew a little thicker. She caught fragments in the nurse's station. A laugh cut short when she entered. A question about who was getting the best off days on the next roster. A comment that Supervisor Clark seemed to know her schedule better than his own. One evening, as she signed in for shift, she saw her name on the roster board and noticed the pattern. Several prime nights lined up with his supervisor rotation. Good off days after heavy weekends, a balance that many nurses fought hard for and rarely got. She stared at the board a second longer than usual. He walked up behind her. "Is it to your liking?" he asked lightly. She felt her face flush. "It is fine," she said, "thank you." "Do not thank me. I only matched your preferences. You filled them out, remember?" He smiled and moved away, already speaking to another staff member. To anyone watching, it looked like simple administration. To her, it felt like a quiet agreement she had not formally signed. Later that night, she went into the staff room to grab a file from the cabinet. She did not realize he was inside until she opened the door. He stood beside the small fridge, pouring juice into a cup. The room smelled of citrus and coffee. "Sorry," she said. "I did not know anybody was in here." "You can come in," he said. "This is your space too." She stepped inside. As she reached for the cabinet, the door behind her swung back on its hinge. It clicked shut. For the first time since she had known this hospital, she became fully aware of the shape of that sound. The sound of a door closing with only two people inside. The air felt heavier. He did not move closer, but he did not move away. "You look tired tonight," he said. "Everything all right?" "Just long week," she replied. "Double shifts, family stuff, you know how it goes. You must care for yourself as much as you care for patients." The words were gentle, his tone wrapped around them like cotton. She turned to face him. They were closer now than they had ever been. Close enough for her to notice the faint scent of his cologne. Close enough for her to see the small scar just above his eyebrow that she had never seen from a distance. For a breath, neither of them spoke. The radio on the shelf was off. There was no music to fill the space. The only sound was the hum of the small fridge motor and the faint murmur of the ward outside. He lowered his voice. "Sometimes I worry they put too much on you." "I can manage," she said, though she felt the strain in every part of her body. "I know you can. That is part of the problem. They give the strongest people the heaviest loads." He took a small step closer. It was not much, but in that tiny room, it was enough to change the feel of everything. "Alana," he said, her name soft on his tongue. Her heart thudded. She did not know what he would say next, but she knew what it felt like to stand on the edge of a line. Every instinct told her this was that edge. A sharp knock hit the door. "Nurse James, you in there?" She jumped back. Her hand flew to the cabinet handle, as if she had been reaching for it the whole time. "Yes," she called, "one second." She opened the door. The assistant nurse stood there, eyebrows slightly raised. "Sorry," the assistant said. "Family for bed 10 want to talk about discharge in the morning." "All right," Alana said. "I'm coming." She stepped out into the corridor, her pulse still fast. She did not look back into the room. She felt the heat on her cheeks and hoped the assistant would chalk it up to the stuffy air. Down the hallway, two nurses from surgical watched her pass. One leaned into the other and whispered. The other shook her head. "Hospital getting like one soap opera," Alana heard one of them say as she turned the corner. That night, as she documented vitals and adjusted drips, her mind kept replaying the closed room, the quiet, the way her name sounded in his mouth. She also heard Marsha's earlier warning again. "Today is a little joke. Tomorrow is rumor. Next week is investigation." When she finally stepped outside at 7:15 a.m., the sky over the Caribbean Sea held the pale light of early morning. The air felt different from the recycled cool inside the ward. She stood by the staff entrance for a moment, bag slung over her shoulder, and tried to breathe out the confusion still tight in her chest. She had done nothing she could write up in an incident report. Nothing she could label as a clear boundary broken. Yet something had shifted. She had felt it in a closed room and in watching eyes. Somewhere inside the building, the day shift had already begun to take over. Somewhere in the administration wing, rosters and reports with her name and his name on them sat in neat stacks. Alana walked toward the bus stop with the sun rising at her back, and one question growing louder in her mind. At what point did friendly support become something she could not explain away? Chapter 2, Favors, Secrets, and a Closed Door. The affair did not start with a single moment. It grew in pieces. A late-night coffee, a private joke at the nurse's station, a shared pause at the window when the ward was quiet and the city lights looked far away. Weeks passed. The pattern settled in. Alana noticed her name more often on the prime parts of the roster. Fewer split shifts, more nights that balanced with decent days off. She told herself she had earned it. She told herself it was only fair after years of taking whatever was left over. Still, when she saw the way other nurses watched the board, she felt the small twist in her stomach. "Medical getting all the blessings," one of them said one morning. "Or maybe is one nurse in particular?" The comment hung in the air. No one said her name. They did not have to. Inside the ward, work went on. Patients came and went. There were dressings to change, relatives to calm, reports to write. In the middle of that, Mr. Clark's presence became something steady. He checked on her ward more than any other. He lingered longer by her station. He found reasons to ask her opinion on things that had nothing to do with medical. "What do you think about the new uniform policy?" he asked one night. "It's hotter than the old one," she replied. "And that skirt length rule is foolishness. We bending down all night. We need room to move." He laughed. The sound was warm. "See, that is why I ask you. You tell the truth." She felt the compliment and the way he framed it. He made her feel like her voice mattered more than the policy itself. One Friday night, the ward was full. A bus accident on the highway had sent three patients their way. The emergency department had stabilized them and passed them up. The night felt like a race. Alana moved from bed to bed, chart in hand, mind on high alert. Near 2:30 a.m., she realized she had not eaten. The cafeteria food she bought before shift still sat untouched in the staff room fridge. When she finally stepped into the room, shoulders stiff and head heavy, he was already there. He stood with his tie loosened and his sleeves rolled up. It was the first time she had ever seen him like that. Less polished. More human. "You look finished," he said. "I feel finished," she answered. He opened the fridge, took out her container, and placed it in the microwave. "Sit," he said. "You have 5 minutes. The ward will not collapse." She sat. It felt wrong and right at the same time. She watched him move around the small room, like he belonged there. When the microwave beeped, he placed the container in front of her and handed her a fork. "I am your supervisor," he said, half joking. "Sometimes that means I must supervise your self-care too." She smiled despite the tiredness. "You sound like one of those wellness posters in the hallway." "But you listen to me more than the poster." His eyes held hers. There it was again, the thin line between concern and something else. She took a bite. The food tasted better than it had in weeks. Hunger sharpened everything. "This is the part where you tell me my management skills are excellent," he said. "Your microwave skills," she replied. He laughed again, a warm, easy sound that floated in the cramped room. When she finished eating, she stood to throw away the container. As she turned, her hip brushed his hand where it rested on the edge of the table. It was a small touch. It could have ended there. Instead, he reached gently for her wrist. She froze. "Alana," he said, voice lower now, "you know you mean a lot to this ward." The word "this" hung there. She heard the other word that sat just behind it. "Me." He watched her face. She felt the room pull in tight, the hum of the fridge, the distant sound of a call bell, her own heartbeat. "This is not appropriate at work," she said quietly. The sentence came out before she could soften it. It hung between them like a straight line. He released her wrist at once. "You are right," he said. "You are absolutely right. Forgive me." He took a small step back. The air shifted. She could breathe again. "I did not mean to make you uncomfortable," he said. "You know I respect you." She nodded. Her throat felt dry. "It is a long night," she said. "We are all tired." They left it there, on the surface at least. After that, he was more careful. For a while. His compliments stayed lighter, his visits shorter. If they were alone in a room, he kept a clear distance. It was just enough to make her feel like she had overreacted before. Then another pattern started. He began to message her after shift. Short notes at first. "Good job tonight. Ward would crash without you. Hope you reach home safe. Remember to rest. You give too much." She saw the messages pop up when she stepped off the bus in the mornings. She read them in bed when she was too wired from night shift to sleep. No one had ever checked on her like that after a long shift. Not a manager. Not a man. At first she replied with simple thanks. Then with small jokes about the chaos of the night. Then with details about her day, her family, the stress of balancing everything. He always responded with care. He always had time. By the end of the month, she found herself waiting for his name to appear on her screen. One evening, on her day off, he sent another message. "You around tomorrow afternoon? I have a training event near your side of town. Could use a guide to the best coffee." She stared at the screen. She knew what it really meant. She also knew no one from work would be there to see. Her finger hovered over the phone. Part of her wanted to say no and push the whole thing back into the safe, blurry space where she could pretend nothing was happening. Another part wanted to see where this road led. "Sure," she replied. "There is a place near the bus park, 3:30. The next day, she met him in clothes that were not a uniform. For a moment, seeing him without his badge in a simple shirt and jeans made him look like an ordinary man. Not the person who signed her evaluations. Not the one who decided her shifts. They talked, they laughed. The conversation flowed easier than she expected. It felt like a date without anyone saying the word. When he walked her to the taxi stand, his hand brushed hers and did not move away. For a few steps they walked like that, hand in hand. In another context it would have looked simple, sweet. Here, it carried another weight. At the edge of the street, he stopped. "Alana," he said. She knew what was coming. He leaned in. She did not move. Their kiss was brief, but it broke something open. The line she had tried to hold at the hospital dissolved on a busy town sidewalk in the heat of late afternoon. After that day, it stopped being almost and became real. They did not do anything at work that could be captured on a camera. They kept distance in public spaces. They spoke about shift numbers and medication orders in front of others. But there were now evenings when she met him after shift at a quiet guest house halfway between the hospital and her community. There were mornings when she went home with the smell of his cologne still in her hair. Each time she told herself she could still pull back, that she was in control, that it was only for a while. At work, the signs of favoritism grew more obvious. When she made a small mistake with a charting entry, he fixed it. It happened on a busy Wednesday night. One of the post-operative patients had his pain medication adjusted. The order was written in a rushed hand. In the hurry between rounds, Alana charted the higher dose as given half an hour earlier than it truly was. She caught the error during her next check. Her stomach dropped. Dosing times mattered. It was not a catastrophic mistake, but it could be serious if the records did not match. She brought the chart to him in the supervisor office, heart knocking. "I made an error with the time," she said. "I need to correct it properly." He took the chart, scanned it, then looked at her. "Did the patient come to any harm?" he asked. "No," she said. "Vitals are fine. I gave it at the right time. I just wrote it wrong." He nodded. "All right, we can fix this." He guided her through the correction line, the proper notation, the counter signature. He did not raise his voice. He did not mention incident forms. "You see," he said afterward, "we all human. The important thing is you caught it." She felt a wave of relief. "Thank you," she said. "I should have been more careful." "You are careful," he replied. "You are one of the safest nurses on this floor. If anybody deserves grace, it is you." Later, in a message, he referred to it again. "Remember, I risked my good name to cover you tonight," he wrote. She frowned at the screen. "You did the professional thing," she replied. "You showed me the right way to fix it." "Yes," he wrote back. "But some supervisors would have written you up. I did not. I care about you. Do not forget that." The words lodged somewhere between comfort and warning. From then on, the mistake sat like a small stone in her chest. She knew he would not expose it. She also knew he now held something over her that could be twisted if things went sour. Her relationships with other staff shifted too. One night in the nurse's station, as she prepared medication, she reached for a vial that was not where it should be. "Who moved the morphine?" she asked. The assistant nurse pointed to the locked drawer. "Charge nurse took it out earlier," she said. "You did not hear, they changing storage because of audit." Alana nodded. She had been on her break then, with him. As she checked the new location, she heard two voices at the back of the station. It's like she in her own world these days. "Which world that, administration or romance?" A soft laugh followed. Paper rustled. The voices dropped lower. She could not make out the words, but she knew the tone. She had heard it in schoolyards and church halls and small shops, the sound of people wrapping someone else's life into a story. Her closest co-worker on nights, a nurse named Keisha, finally spoke plainly one evening. They stood in the medication room together, door shut, counting vials for the end of shift tally. "I going ask you something," Keisha said. "You can vex if you want." "Go on," Alana replied. "What really going on with you and Supervisor Clark?" Alana's head jerked up. "Nothing more than work," she said quickly. Keisha gave her a long, level look. "You know I am not a fool," she said, "and I am not one of them who love mix-up. I do not care who you talk to or who you go out with, but this man holds your evaluation in his hand. He holds our roster. He holds the future of your career here. You see the problem." Alana felt her jaw set. "I know what I am doing," she said. "I am not a child." "That is not the point," Keisha replied. "You can think you in control now, but when HR get a call, they not going to see equal power, they going to see supervisor and staff nurse. And they will not spare you, because you pretty and hard working." The words stung. "Keep your voice down," Alana said. "I am only saying it because I care," Keisha went on, softer now. "People talking. Some of them already saying he giving you special shifts. Some jealous, some angry. One or two of them already talking about how long they can take it before they go over his head." "Let them talk," Alana said, even as the thought made her chest tight. "They talk about everything." "This is different," Keisha said. "This is about money and fairness and respect. You know how nurses feel when they think someone getting ahead because of who they with." The room felt smaller. The count sheet blurred for a second. "I hear you," Alana said finally, "but I am fine." Keisha sighed. "Fine is what people say when they standing in the middle of a fire and pretending it is just a little smoke." On a later night, the fire finally threw sparks into the open. It was around 3:10 a.m. The ward was quieter than usual. One of the elderly patients had finally drifted into a deep sleep after hours of restlessness. Another, a middle-aged man with chest pain, snored softly. Alana stepped into the small side office off the ward to review a stack of lab results. Mr. Clark was there, going through staffing reports. The room door remained half open. She sat across from him, charts in hand. They spoke about staffing shortages, the plan for the upcoming flu season, the pressure from management to cut overtime. It was the kind of dry administrative talk that could put anyone to sleep. Yet she felt strangely alive in those moments. She enjoyed feeling like she had a say beyond her ward. At one point, the conversation drifted. "You know, if you keep this up," he said, "in a few years, you could be sitting in this seat." She raised an eyebrow. "As night supervisor. Or higher," he said. "You have that spark." She smiled despite herself. "You really know how to make a girl feel special," she said. "I am telling the truth," he replied. "And yes, you are special." He reached across the desk and rested his hand over hers. It was a simple gesture, gentle, intimate. The door, half open, made her nervous. "Jerome," she said quietly, "we are at work." He did not move his hand. "You think I do not know that," he said. "You think I do not understand the risk I take even sitting here like this. Why you believe I do it?" Her pulse picked up. "You should remove your hand," she said. Slowly he did. He leaned back in his chair, eyes still on her. "One day you will believe that I am not just playing with you," he said. Before she could answer, a sharp sound cut through the air from the ward, a monitor alarm, then a second one. The kind of tone that grabbed the base of a nurse's spine and squeezed. They both jumped to their feet. Alana reached the corridor first. The assistant nurse was already at bed 9, where the middle-aged man with chest pain lay motionless. "His pressure drop," the assistant shouted. "He say he felt funny, then just gone." For one raw moment, the room filled with moving bodies and clipped words. Alana took charge without thinking. "Check his airway," she ordered. "Start oxygen. Call the doctor now. Get the trolley." They moved as a team. She counted compressions. She watched the monitor. Time seemed to slow and speed up at once. She did not think about the office or the touch on her hand. She thought about the man in the bed whose life was now balanced on their actions. The doctor arrived. Orders flew. Medications were pushed. After what felt like an hour, but was less than 20 minutes, they got a weak but steady rhythm back. The man's chest rose with mechanical help. The crisis shifted from life or death to watch and wait. As the immediate emergency died down, the senior nurse from the floor below appeared at the doorway. She had been called as backup. Her eyes swept the room, landed on Alana, then on Mr. Clark, who stood slightly back now. "Who was in charge when this started?" she asked. "I was," Alana said. "And where were you?" The question hit harder than any alarm. "In the side office," she answered, "reviewing lab results." The senior nurse looked from her to him. The weight of that glance said more than any word. "Side office is not the ward," the senior nurse said. "You are the registered nurse in charge. I need you in earshot of your patients, especially high-risk ones. You know this." "Yes," Alana replied. "I understand." The senior nurse turned to Mr. Clark. "And you, supervisor, you know better too." His jaw tightened. "We were discussing staffing issues," he said. "We did not anticipate this sudden turn." "Emergencies rarely send an email first," the senior nurse said. "You both need to remember where your first priority lies." Later, as the ward calmed and the extra staff went back to their floors, the assistant nurse pulled Alana aside. "I am glad he pulled through," the assistant said. "But people going to ask where you were when it started." "I was on the floor," Alana said, even as she knew it was not the full truth. "You were in a room," the assistant replied. "With the door nearly closed, people see things, people talk." The words settled on her like heavy cloth. Toward the end of the shift, Keisha came in early for her day duty. She listened as Alana gave verbal report on the night. When they stepped aside for a moment, Keisha spoke in a low tone. "I hear about the incident," she said. "I also hear about where you were just before it." Alana felt her stomach twist. "I was reviewing results," she said. "You were in his office," Keisha replied. "People saw. You think they're not going to add that to the story that already spinning?" She swallowed. "What story? The one where you getting best shifts, most chances, and private time with the supervisor while others drown," Keisha said. "Somebody already talking about writing a letter. Not to the ward sister, higher." Alana's chest tightened. "Who? I do not know for sure," Keisha said. "Maybe one of the ones who always left with the worst roster. Maybe someone tired of how things running. It does not even matter which person. What matters is that you are now in a place where your private choices and your professional name are tied up together." The early morning light filtered through the high windows and painted pale lines across the floor. Around them, the ward buzzed with the small sounds of handover. New voices greeting patients, old ones fading out with tired goodbyes. Alana stood there, caught between the night that had just finished and the day that was starting. She felt the shift in the air. It was no longer only about whispers and small favors. It had moved into a space where formal words like complaint and investigation could live. Keisha placed a hand on her arm. "I am telling you this now," she said, "because by next week, it might not be in your hands anymore." Alana nodded, but her mind was already racing ahead, to offices with closed doors that did not belong to her, to letters with her name written in ink she could not erase, and to a boardroom where people who had never seen her on a night shift would sit in judgment of choices they only knew in pieces. Chapter 3. Rumors reached the board. The letter arrived on a Tuesday. Alana did not see it. She only felt the echo of it moving through the building. It started with the way the ward sister's face tightened when she came out of the administration wing. It moved in the way two senior nurses lowered their voices when she passed. It settled in the sudden quiet when she stepped into the nurse's station. She tried to brush it off at first. Hospitals were full of tension, a bad result, a missing supply, a visit from the health ministry, Anything could put people on edge. But then she saw her own name in print. It was at 9:45 a.m. She had just finished a night shift and stopped by the staff room to sign some training forms. She was halfway through her signature when the ward sister called her. "Alana, a moment, please." The sister stood at the doorway to her small office. Her face was calm, but her eyes were serious. "Come." Inside, the office felt smaller than usual. The blinds were half closed, cutting the room into bands of light and shadow. On the desk, beside the computer and the stack of charts, sat a single manila envelope. The sister gestured to the chair. "Sit." Alana sat. Her heart began to thump. She forced her hands to stay still in her lap. The sister tapped the envelope. "There has been an anonymous complaint," she said. "It went straight to Human Resources. HR has shared it with the Chief Nursing Officer and the Board Personnel Committee." The words stacked up like a wall. "Complaint about what?" Alana asked, though she already knew. The sister opened the envelope and slid out a printed page. She did not hand it over yet. "It alleges an inappropriate relationship between you and Night Supervisor Clark," she said. "It claims that you receive favorable shifts and protection because of this relationship. It also mentions the incident with the cardiac patient last week and questions whether your attention was where it should have been." A hot flush rose from Alana's chest to her face. She felt exposed, as if someone had pulled back a curtain she had been hiding behind. "Who wrote it?" she asked. "It is anonymous," the sister said. "Typed, no signature." "So anyone," Alana said. "Anyone," the sister agreed. "But the level of detail suggests someone who works close to you, or to him." Alana swallowed hard. "Is it true?" the sister asked quietly. "The relationship?" The room seemed to hold its breath. Alana stared at her hands. She thought of every moment that had led to this, every text, every coffee, every closed door, every time she had told herself she was still in control. She could lie, she could deny, she could say it was gossip, and nothing more. But she remembered Keisha's words. She remembered the senior nurse's eyes on her after the code. She remembered the patient on the bed, chest still, while she sat in a side office. She took a slow breath. "Yes," she said, "there was a relationship." The room stayed quiet. The sister leaned back in her chair. "Is it still ongoing?" she asked. Alana closed her eyes for a second. "No," she said, "it is not." The sister studied her face. "When did it end?" "This week," Alana replied. "In my mind, at least. I told him yesterday that it cannot continue." The sister nodded slowly. "Did you ever feel pressured?" she asked. "Did he ever use his position to push you into anything you did not want?" Alana thought of the night in the staff room when he held her wrist, the text about covering her charting error, the way he framed his care as risk. "It did not start like pressure," she said. "It started like support, like mentorship. Then after a while, it became harder to say no. I do not know when the line moved." The sister sighed. "This is serious," she said. "You know the policy. Supervisors are not supposed to be in intimate relationships with staff they directly oversee. The power difference is too great. It does not matter how mutual it feels. The board will see it as a conflict of interest and a risk." "I know," Alana said softly. "HR will call you in for a formal interview," the sister went on. "They will ask specific questions about when it started, about decisions he made that affected you, about whether patient care was impacted." "So this is now official," Alana said. "It is beyond me now," the sister replied. "It is at the level of the Chief Nursing Officer and the board. I need you to be honest with them. I also need you to protect yourself." Alana looked up. "How do I protect myself now?" she asked. The sister's face softened. "You start by claiming your own story," she said. "You make it clear that you understand the policy, that you accept where you went wrong, and that you can separate yourself from him going forward. You are not the first nurse to get caught in a dynamic like this. You will not be the last. What matters is that you face it with truth." She slid the letter across the desk. "Read it," she said. "Then go home and rest if you can. HR will call." Alana picked up the page. The words felt sharp even before she read them. The letter spoke about perceived favoritism and compromised professional boundaries. It referred to patterns of roster allocation and frequent closed-door meetings. It mentioned the night of the code and asked whether the supervisor's presence in the side office was personal rather than clinical. It did not say her name until the last paragraph. When she saw it, printed in full, it made her feel as if someone had pushed a pin through her identity and pinned it to a board. She left the office in a blur. The corridor looked the same. White walls, posters about hand hygiene, the hum of air conditioning. Nurses moved in and out of the ward, carrying basins and charts. Patients' relatives waited on benches, eyes tired and hopeful. Inside, everything had shifted. By the time she reached home, the call from HR had already come through. They booked her for a meeting on Thursday at 10:30 a.m. They told her to expect members of the HR team, the chief nursing officer, and a representative from the board personnel committee. She stood in her small kitchen after the call, phone in her hand, staring at the sink. A dish towel hung over the tap. A pot sat on the stove. The normal things of her life, waiting for her. Her mother called from the bedroom. "Alana, you reach." "Yes, Mommy," she answered, trying to steady her voice. "You eat anything yet?" "Not yet." "Make something before you sleep. Night shift will kill you if you're not careful." Alana leaned her head against the cool tile wall for a moment. In that small house, her mother knew nothing about the letters and the board and the way her name was now on a list. She only saw a daughter who came home tired and needed food. "I will cook something," Alana said. "I am all right." It was only half true. The days between the call and the meeting moved slowly but also vanished fast. Word spread. The hospital was a maze that carried gossip like a current. She felt it even in the way people greeted her. Some were normal. Some had a new, careful edge. Keisha came to her on the second day. "I heard," she said quietly, catching Alana near the staff entrance. "Everybody heard," Alana replied. "You all right?" "No," Alana said, "but I am standing." Keisha nodded. "You need support for that meeting. Ask if you can bring someone from the union, or at least take notes. Do not go in there acting like you alone on the planet and they are the judges. You have a voice too." Alana had not thought of that. "They will see me as the one who broke policy," she said. "They will see you as the one with less power," Keisha replied. "Do not forget that. Even if you made mistakes, you were not the one with the keys to the roster and the evaluation form. Do not carry all of this on your back alone." On Thursday, she dressed carefully, no uniform. HR had told her to come in civilian clothes. She chose a simple navy blouse and a dark skirt. Nothing bright, nothing that would draw comment. She tied her hair back in a neat bun and wore small earrings. As she walked through the front entrance of the hospital that morning, the building felt like it was looking at her. The security guard nodded as usual. The receptionist smiled, but the knowledge of the meeting colored every glance. HR sat on the second floor in a wing that always felt a little away from the real work of the wards. The corridors were quieter, the floors shinier, the air cooler. A woman from HR met her at the door of the conference room. "Good morning, Nurse James," she said. "Thank you for coming." Inside, a long table stretched across the room. At one end sat the chief nursing officer. Beside her, two HR officers. At the far side, a middle-aged man in a grey suit who was introduced as a member of the board personnel committee. They all had documents in front of them. Copies of the letter, policy binders, a file with her name on it. "Please, have a seat," the chief nursing officer said. Alana sat. Her hands rested on the table. She tried to keep them from trembling. "This is a formal investigation interview," the HR officer began. "We are here to hear from you regarding allegations of an inappropriate relationship with night supervisor Jerome Clark and any related conduct that may have affected the workplace or patient care." They asked her to state her full name and position. They asked how long she had worked at the hospital. They asked about her performance record. For each answer, someone made notes. Then came the hard questions. "Did you have a personal or intimate relationship with Mr. Clark while he held direct supervisory authority over you?" "Yes," she said, "I did." "Approximately when did this relationship begin?" She gave them the rough timeline. After the late night coffees, after the messages, after the afternoon in town. "When did it end?" "This week," she said. "I told him that I could not continue, that it was wrong, and that I needed clear boundaries between my work and my personal life." "Can you tell us the exact words you used?" the board member asked. She took a breath. "I told him, we cannot do this anymore," she said. "I said, whatever we have, it cannot continue while you are my supervisor. I said, I need to protect my job, my patients, and my name. I asked him not to call or message me outside of work for personal reasons again. Writing pens moved faster then. Someone underlined something. Did you ever feel coerced? The HR officer asked. Did you ever feel that your job or your roster or your evaluation depended on continuing the relationship? She thought carefully. There were times when he used his position in ways that made it hard to say no, she said. He fixed a charting error for me and reminded me later that other supervisors would have written me up. He chose my shifts. He used language that tied his support to our closeness. She paused. I did not always feel forced, she went on. Sometimes I felt flattered, sometimes I felt safe. That is part of what makes it complicated. But as time went on, I realized that the power difference meant I could not truly be equal in it. That realization is part of why I said it had to stop. The chief nursing officer leaned forward slightly. Were there any occasions when your attention to patients was affected because you were engaged with him? She asked. Alana felt the weight of the cardiac case settle on her. The night of the chest pain patient, she said. I was in the side office with him when the nurse called out that the patient had crashed. Would you say your physical distance from the bedside delayed your response? The board member asked. I responded as soon as I heard the alarm, she said. But if I had been at the nurse's station, I would have been closer. I accept that. Silence sat heavy for a moment. Did he suggest that you meet regularly in that office? The HR officer asked. We often spoke there about staffing and ward issues, she replied. Sometimes it was purely work. Sometimes it was more. Did you ever report the relationship or ask for a change in supervision? Her throat tightened. No, she said, I did not. Why not? She stared at the smooth surface of the table. I was afraid, she said. Afraid of losing my job. Afraid of being judged. Afraid that people would not believe I could have been both responsible and vulnerable. I told myself I could manage it on my own and that it would not affect my work. I was wrong. The room stayed quiet for a few seconds. The chief nursing officer spoke again. Our policy is clear, she said. Supervisors are expected to avoid relationships that create conflicts of interest with staff they evaluate or roster. They hold more power and more responsibility. Even if a staff member feels willing, the imbalance remains. She looked directly at Alana. Do you understand that? Yes, Alana said. I understand now in a way I did not feel fully before. What do you think should happen next? The board member asked. It was an unexpected question. She looked up, surprised. I think there must be consequences, she said slowly. For him as the supervisor, and for me as the nurse who crossed a boundary for my role. I also think there must be clear protection for staff who get pulled into dynamics like this. Training. Safe reporting paths. A way to ask for help before it reaches this point. Would you be willing to move to another ward or change your roster to avoid direct contact with Mr. Clark? The HR officer asked. Yes, she said. I would prefer that. I do not want him in charge of my evaluations or my shifts again. I need distance to keep my boundaries. They asked more questions, about messages, about who knew, about whether she had ever felt threatened when she tried to pull away. She answered as honestly as she could. When it was over, the HR officer closed the file. Thank you for your candor, she said. The board committee will review everything. That includes your record, his record, the complaint letter, and these interviews. There will likely be actions taken. You will be informed in writing. The chief nursing officer added one more thing. Whatever the outcome, she said, I want you to know this. Workplace manipulation is real. It often hides under kindness and special attention. You had a part in this. He had a larger part. We will deal with both. For now, go home, wait for the formal decision, and take care of yourself. As Alana left the room, she saw Jerome waiting in a chair in the outer office. He looked smaller than she had ever seen him. His tie was perfect, but his eyes were tired. Their gazes met for a moment. Alana, he began. She raised a hand, palm outward. We cannot talk, she said quietly. Not here, not now, maybe not again. His mouth opened as if to argue. Then he closed it. HR staff watched from their desks. The corridor air felt charged. She turned and walked away. Weeks later, the outcome came in two letters. The first detailed the actions taken against him. he was removed from his role as night supervisor and reassigned to a non-managerial post on another unit pending further review. His pay was adjusted, his record marked with a breach of policy. There would be mandatory training and a formal warning that any further boundary issues could lead to dismissal. The second letter was for her. It affirmed that she had violated the professional code by entering a relationship with someone who evaluated her. It noted that, based on the investigation, there was no evidence she had harmed a patient, but that her judgment around location and availability had been affected on at least one occasion. The board decided on a formal written warning in her file, a temporary bar from acting roles, and mandatory ethics and boundaries training. She was to be reassigned to another ward, where he had no authority over her. Her union representative had pushed back against harsher options. They had listened. Reading the letter, she felt two things at once: shame and relief. Shame that her name sat on that page with words like warning and violation. Relief that it did not say suspension or termination. When she reported to her new ward, the matron greeted her with a steady hand. "We know your record," the matron said. "The good and the difficult. On this ward you are a nurse like any other. The work is heavy. The patients need you focused. Leave the story at the door and bring only what you learned." In the quieter moments between rounds, Alana tried to sort through what she had learned. She thought of all the red flags she had ignored. The extra visits, the private messages, the late-night compliments that mixed care with control, the way he tied favors to loyalty, the way she had started to depend on his praise to feel valued, the way fear had crept in when she considered saying no. She also thought of all the ways the system had made it easy. The long shifts, the lack of support, the culture that rewarded those who stayed quiet and punished those who spoke up. The unspoken rule that you should be grateful for any protection from a senior, even if it came wrapped in strings. One evening, after a training session on professional boundaries, the facilitator asked each participant to share one clear sentence they could use in the future. "A boundary line you can say out loud when someone pushes too close," the facilitator said. "Keep it plain. Keep it firm." When it was her turn, Alana spoke without looking at anyone. "If you are in charge of my shifts or my evaluation, we cannot have anything personal," she said. "I need my job and my body to be safe, not tied to favors." Her voice did not shake. The room was quiet. Later, Keisha sent her a message. "Heard about your new ward," she wrote. "Miss you on nights. Proud of you for facing all of this." Alana replied. "One day at a time," she wrote back. "I am learning where the lines are and how to keep them." On her new ward, there were still late nights and hard cases. There were still supervisors, some kind, some rough. But when any of them lingered too long at her station or offered something that came with a look, she felt the old pattern start to stir. She also felt something new. She felt the strength to step back. One week, a senior registrar tried a small joke that landed too close to her skin. Instead of laughing it off, she met his eyes. "Keep it professional, please," she said. "I am here to work." He shrugged and moved on. The world did not end. Her shifts did not vanish. Her name stayed on the roster. The rumors about her and the supervisor faded slowly. New stories rose to replace them. The hospital never ran out of drama. People moved on. But the board's decision stayed in her file. A quiet record of a line crossed and reset. On a night when she left the hospital late, she stood again by a window that looked out over the city. The lights shimmered against the dark of the Caribbean sky. For a moment, she remembered the first time she had stood like this beside him. The closeness, the praise, the feeling of being chosen. Now she stood alone. She thought of the younger nurses just starting out, the ones already catching the eye of men in higher roles, the ones who did not yet know how complicated power could look when it smiled. One day, she promised herself, she would find a way to speak to them. Not in a lecture, not in a policy memo, in plain talk, in stories, about how manipulation sometimes came dressed as protection, about how easy it was to confuse attention with care, about how important it was to keep a line for yourself, even when no one else drew it. For now, she picked up her bag and walked toward the bus stop. Inside the hospital, boards and offices and files held pieces of her story. Outside, the night air felt open and clean. She could not rewrite what had happened. She could choose what happened next. As she stepped into the road light, she carried one clear thought with her. No matter how kind the voice or how gentle the hand, no one would ever again hold her career, her body, and her silence in the same grip.